What up? Welcome to another episode of the Dealer Talk Podcast. This is your host, Herb Anderson. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have an amazing guest, somebody that's been in the dealership doing the deal, who has, in a positive way, transcended the industry and has really used that as a springboard to achieve a lot of great things. So I'm very humbled to welcome back to the show the real Brad Lee. What's up, sir? How are you, man?
Hey, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate you.
Dude, this is awesome, man. I'm super excited. For the listeners, I'm going to try to keep this as related to the automotive industry as I can, but you know, I got to be honest, this is a great opportunity to just learn from many things. So we'll see how it goes. I typically kick things off with a background, but you know, everybody follows your content. People know who you are. So I wanted to kind of maybe twist that a little bit and start with why the car business, right? I mean, you could have sold anything. You could have sold real estate. You could have sold pharmaceuticals. But I have to assume that you saw something within the automotive industry that maybe pulled you in, or you saw an opportunity to do something within that industry. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, but not really, dude. The main reason is because they said yes when I applied.
Right on.
You know, and it's the truth. I didn't know anything about the car business. I got a job which was very, very, very difficult, manual labor. It was up in the woods of Oregon, ultimately walking up and down mountains looking for smoldering stumps, and I didn't like it. I got poison oak. It was very hard work, and I realized very quickly I don't like hard work. So I opened up the newspaper and found a job that said, hey, come learn to sell cars, we'll train you and everything. So I went in there and I got to wear a suit, and they gave me a free car. I mean, one place was promising me poison oak rashes as part of the job, and one of them was promising me free cars to drive. Which one would you take?
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, you know, poison oak and hard work or Trans Ams and suits and shit. So I put on a suit and walked in there and asked for a job. It's funny, too, because I was actually 17, almost 18, and you had to be 18. So I marked that I was 18. But then again, I got hired and I started bragging that I was actually only 17, like an idiot. I was telling all the haters. I didn't even know what a hater was back then. I didn't know that all the other salesmen that would be pissed when I was hired because I wasn't lazy and I wasn't sitting there, you know, doing stupid crap. I was hungry. I was new. It was like, you know, I bothered existing salespeople. So I didn't realize that they would get me in trouble, but I bragged that I was really only 17. And boy, did I get one over on the company. So the GM called me into his office and he said, how old are you? And I already knew that he knew, so I didn't want to lie. So I said, 17. He said, when do you turn 18? I said, in like a month, month and a half. He said, how many cars you got out? Now, this was about the 15th of the month. And I'm like, 23, which is unheard of, yeah, bro. You know that. Like, dude, this back then, dude, the top guys in the world were doing 30, 40. If you were like, and I didn't know it, but, you know, brand new people were doing 3 to 6. You know, I had 23. I was just crushing it. And the GM knew I was crushing it. And I stirred up the other salespeople so they weren't as lazy anymore. And what was funny is he leaned over and he said, can you keep your mouth shut that long? And I said, sure. And he said, all right, get on out there and finish your month. Good month. And so like, and I'm thinking, man, this is my kind of business, right? Like, dude, I'm a common sense guy. And a lot of the car guys back then, you know, even though the rules were this and the rules were that, it's like some of the rules are stupid sometimes. Like sometimes, you know, who cares? Like you're not breaking the law. You're not being unethical. Like bend the rules. Like you got to be 18 to work here. Why? What magically happens when I'm 18? Like I'm a month and a half away from 18. I'm going to be different in a month and a half. Well, that's the rule. So they overlooked that rule and I appreciated it. And that's what gave me kind of the loyalty I had. Not to mention the, you know, I was making killer money at 18 years old.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I was making commission. I was making more money than almost anybody in my family. I got a free car to drive. I got to wear a suit and tie to work. People were coming in for a car. It wasn't like I was hoping to sell them a car because they were there for a bag of oranges. Like my job wasn't to switch them from peanut butter and jelly to a car. Like they were there looking for a car. What luck.
Wow. That's awesome, man. So let's talk about that a little bit, because I've heard you talk about your mindset back then. And one of the things that I really liked about what you said is that you looked at it like your own business. Like you felt lucky that they had the inventory there and you had a desk and a place, you know, to kind of conduct business. But your mindset was, this is my business, and you're going to kind of operate it in that way.
No, I was 18. I didn't have that mindset.
What was that?
I was 18. I didn't have that mindset, dude. You're making me sound like a really intelligent 18-year-old, dude. I was a jack off. I was there for a car and easy money, and you know, I couldn't wait to get out of there. And you know, I didn't realize, hell, man, this is like my own business. They're paying the advertising. All I need is a pen. Like I've heard it all growing up in the business. Like why you should appreciate the opportunity more, and it's legit. However, I wasn't thinking like that back then. No way.
Well, but now, like, you know, the Bradley of today, like, would you say that as somebody in the, not just the car business, I think in sales in general, do you think it behooves us to look at that as an owner operator, like kind of take ownership of that role? Like, hey, this is my business sort of a deal. Do you think that shift and how we look at it can help us sell more and just be more successful?
Yeah. I mean, dude, I got to be honest, and a lot of the GMs listening, or if there's anybody listening, I don't even know how big this is or how small this is, or, you know, this could be worldwide and I'm about to kill my whole name in the business. But listen, I believe dealers and GMs need to wake up a little bit. Okay. They've been making so much money for so long. It's pretty easy to make money in the car business. You got a license to print money, and we're not treating our employees very well. We're training people ineffectively. We're throwing them to the wolves. The turnover is ridiculous. The stereotype of a car salesman is not good. You know, we got to tell the truth and wake up and realize, hey, we got some work to do. So what do? Well, let's start training our people effectively. And by the way, I don't blanket everybody. So there are great dealers out there, and then there's not so good dealers out there. I'm talking in general as an industry. Mm-hmm. You know, let's train our people better. Let's teach ethics and things that matter to where not only are we building better and more successful and productive salespeople, but we're building better human beings. Like, listen, there's a lot of people in the car business that are good, strong, ethical people, and they get chewed up and spit out because they're not trained properly. Or the person that's training them is a dirtbag.
Right.
And the dealer doesn't even realize you got a dirtbag training your new people. You got a dirtbag telling them don't follow the policies. You got a shortcutter training your new salesman to do five liners as opposed to, you know, proper credit apps. But again, I haven't been in a dealership in probably 15 years. So I'm not going to claim to know what's going on at the latest and greatest. But I know that technology is different. And I know that if you're not teaching your individual salespeople how to build an individual brand, then you're not training them very well. You're not equipping them with today's knowledge. And a lot of dealerships are like that, dude. They farm it out to BDCs. And, you know, it's like, come on, dude, what happened to a salesman answer in your phone call?
Exactly.
So like at the end of the day, I would go into a business or a dealership today a little bit differently. I would be really leveraging social media. I would be trying to empower my individual employees to become almost intra-employees, meaning I want the people that are making landing pages and like creating marketing funnels and putting on a tent event without the dealership if necessary. Like, where are these intrapreneurs? Well, you have to train them and provide a path of knowledge and success, because people quit because they're not making money. Like, I would have quit the car business if I didn't make money. I know a lot of people that quit because they're not making money. Now, why aren't they making money?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it right now. I think the business has evolved, you know, because I haven't been in the dealership myself in several years. But, dude, I remember back in those days, like, those guys were hungry. They would go out with business cards and knock on doors and that sort of thing. And now you have, like you said, like social media, you could pay Facebook or an Instagram $10 and reach 100, 200 people within your local area. Yet we're not doing those things. It's like we're transitioning from salespeople to order takers almost. And I see that, and I consult with many, many dealerships, and I just see it over and over again where I walk into this dealership and the guys are like literally sitting on a golf cart in front of the store waiting for that up to come. And it's like, I don't know. It's just a weird mindset.
You know why though? Because they don't have a strong management team showing them any different. Because if a management team thinks it's okay to sit out there on a golf cart, well then I would have too. So at the end of the day, nobody's leading them. Nobody's showing them. You don't sit on a golf cart, fool. you create traffic. So there's no time to be sitting. Like, don't wait for traffic, find traffic. With the internet today, brother, you shouldn't ever be out on the lot waiting for anything.
Exactly.
And if anything, and you were really intelligent, you'd freaking be entrepreneurial and you'd have a spotter out on the lot while you were on the phone and digital media finding people. Because again, the internet is the lot. Like, why would you wait for them to come on your physical lot? Why would you be waiting on a golf cart? You think someone's going to fly in on a magic carpet or something? not to mention there's seven other people standing around. Now you're going to go all fight over the person. Now the person's going to feel stupid, not want to come back to your store. Like, dude, it's just backwards. And the car business as a whole needs to, I think, fix it. You know, why when you say you're a car salesman, do people be like, Well, dude, car salesman, a good one, makes just as much as a doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so why Well, they say because of the stereotype, and the stereotype is the plaid wearing bullshit and tell you anything sales guy, when in reality, folks, that they don't exist anymore. The internet is telling customers more of the product knowledge than the salesperson is. Yep. The salesperson's there to take a test drive and write it up, you know, and build relationships and ask for referrals and do stuff that, you know, normally wouldn't get done unless you had a human being involved. Because as soon as they don't need a human being involved, there won't be a human being involved.
Yeah, dude. I love that. And one of the things that you said earlier about the leadership, I wanted to kind of touch on that, right? So when you were doing your deal, did you have a mentor or did you seek that out? Because there's two ways. Somebody can typically take you under their wing if they see something in you, or maybe you put yourself on that path of, hey, you know, I want to learn from you, sort of a deal. How can we kind of collaborate? I mean, is that something that you did or?
Yeah, I mean, a blend of everything. Obviously, I paid attention. Okay, I was very observant. I'm very clever, and I notice things, and I can emulate quickly and easily people, accents, things like that. So I was paying attention. I was aware. I listened to people closing deals. I listened to customers. I wondered why they said no. I started to ask, why are you saying no? Then I developed a lease presentation called the Real Deal Lease Presentation. And that lease presentation would get almost anybody that was refusing to lease a car. And when no one wanted to lease a car, that was back when there was open-ended leases. So I could get people to convert to a lease so easily, which gave me more money, more gross, more ways to unbury them in their trade. I sold a lot of cars only because I could convert someone to a lease pretty easily. So I invented the Real Deal Lease Presentation and then started selling that to car dealerships. What was your question? Shit, you're going to get me off on memory lane here.
Like did you have a mentor that somebody take you on?
I learned the hard way. But again, I had mentors. I just didn't realize they were mentors. There were GMs coming up that were like cool old school car guys. There was other salespeople that were cool. And, you know, I listened and they, you know, we role play and come up with funny things to say. I'd find funny things to say just by experimenting, just by being sharp witted and clever. But over the years, I would say it's a combination of listening and learning and trying to make it mine, to where now, like if I went into a car dealership, even today, and started training, I could double their numbers 9 times out of 10. If the dealership is not already running efficiently, because a lot of these dealerships, they're out on the golf cart, dude. That's a management problem. Okay, maybe the managers don't have the answers. Okay, well then you need a training system. You need a training system. You need to train those people to not be on the golf cart. Because why are they on the golf cart? Someone's letting them be. They don't know any better. Like, why are they standing out there?
Yeah,
it's just like when I used to walk up, people would smoke cigarettes and flick it on the lot. Dude, you don't let them flick the cigarettes on the lot. You don't let them stick their foot up on the wall. So now the wall's got that dirt on it.
Right.
You know, I personally, when I ran dealerships, didn't allow them to congregate. Like if you were talking to another salesperson, you're too close. Like go out there and get some numbers off the car. Go put a balloon on a couple cars and you'll be out in the inventory. So when they walk in, whoever's there, whoever's closest, you know, then there was dealerships with up systems where, you know, you had to police yourselves and, you know, that caused all kinds of problems. I've been on lots where like you're allowed to drag them by the tie in the back and fight. like dude, car business was great, man. And I think right now, like I had my sons go sell cars. I think it's the best boot camp for sales and personal development in the world. Dude, why?
Right on. And that's well, awesome.
What's that?
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, it's a great boot camp. You get thick skin, you get camaraderie, you get opportunity, you meet people, and you might love it. It's like the military, dude. Sometimes people stay in the military, become generals. I'm not mad at them. I didn't want to be property owned and whatnot, but if you knew a general that made a career out of the military, I respect that. Just like I respect dealers and people that grew up in the car business and became a dealer. Or, you know, I was going to end up owning a car dealership if I would have stayed in the car business. I was already heading to NADA's GM school. I was working, I believe, for Sonic Automotive. They had me pegged to come back and do this Cadillac store. And then ultimately, you know, I would have ended up buying my own dealership, et cetera. Or that was the goal.
Right.
And if I would have, dude, that's still an entrepreneur. Like dealers, the dealers that own the dealerships, dude, they are entrepreneurs, right, man. They're taking risks. They're in business. Fortunately, it's a license to print money. And if you're a car dealer that's not profitable, I would tell you, reach out to me just for personal coaching and consulting. Because if you got the license and the facility, I got the know-how. Mm-hmm. And I'd figure out a deal with you where, you know, I'll just coach you. I'll just get your dealership making money. If you're in the business and you want to make more, again, I'd reach out to me just simply for the closing and the persuasion and the training that we do. Or Grant or any of our clients. Grant Cardone has a lot of car dealerships. Joe Verde, who you've heard of, obviously, yeah, if you're in the car business, he's on Lightspeed. So Grant Cardone, Joe Verde, a lot of the big name trainers in that industry are on Lightspeed. So I would reach out and train your people with content and make sure that they realize they shouldn't be sitting on that golf cart. Or I'd train your management how to be managers. A lot of dealerships I was a manager at, dude, they didn't teach me any management skills. They didn't teach me any leadership skills. I could have got them sued a lot in the car business. We used to put signs on people's, on salesmen's back that were walking out to the customers. We joked around a lot. I'd put a sign on a salesman's back. I'd tap them on the back, say good job, and I'm really putting a sign on their back that says stupid shit. Like I sent them out in the field of customers with a sign that said, like, I have a crooked boner, or I've got sand in my clam. And we would just sit there and laugh that this salesman doesn't know that he's got this sign on the back. And then we'd watch customers, and then, you know, some customers would get up and tell them and take it off, then they'd read it, and it's, you know, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. So we were jokesters. I guarantee you, I put the dealers I worked for in massive liability and wasn't even aware of it. I didn't even realize it. One time we went up on the roof with a 5-gallon waste bucket filled with water, and we parked a car down below us. So we told the new kid to get the VIN number off the car. So the new kid was leaning over the windshield, reading the VIN number like this, and we dumped the bucket of water from the roof down onto his head, and it hit his head, and he was skinny to begin with, but the water hit his head with such force, it smashed his face into the windshield.
Yeah.
And he came up with blood on his nose and a broken tooth, and we did it, and we were laughing about it, but obviously when he got hurt, it wasn't that funny.
Yeah, no.
But dude, we didn't get sued. We didn't. You know, I don't know if that still goes on today, man.
A little bit, but it obviously, you know, there's a saying in the car business right now that HR kind of killed the fun out of the whole deal, because now obviously it's not like that. But you know,
yeah, but that's, I don't agree with that. That's somebody blaming HR. Listen, HR just wants you to do it with ethics and integrity and compliance. If you can't be ethical and have integrity and not be a sleazeball and have fun, well then, dude, you got problems. Like, I can have fun at a car dealership without violating people.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So you said something right now that I wanted to develop and kind of moving things along here. And it has to do with risk, right? So you are at a place. So just to kind of give you a little bit of my thought on this. So I feel like it's a lot easier to take a risk when you have nothing to lose. Like, and you've talked about this on your content. Like, if you're miserable at your job, then quitting your job should be the easiest thing to do, right? Because you hate it.
Yeah, but dude, taking a risk with nothing to lose isn't a risk, okay?
Right.
A risk means you might lose something. So you can't take a risk if you have nothing to lose. Exactly. You take a chance.
Yeah, yeah. So for you, you were at that level where you were managing, you're making good money, you have, you know, I don't want to say comfort, because the the automotive industry is so volatile, but you have some sort of security, right? You have a, you're building a name for yourself, and then you see this opportunity to kind of take that to the next level, which kind of springboarded into training that ultimate. And I don't know if Lightspeed was in your mind at that point in time, but it, you know, I have to assume that it led you to where you are to a certain degree. How is that transition from being at that place where you have a lot to lose and then being like, okay, I'm ready for the next thing, and I'm just going to invest in myself or in the next thing?
Well, I don't believe people, you know, should necessarily rely on seeing an opportunity. I think they should be more focused on creating an opportunity, which I think is what I did. And I did it because ultimately I helped a lot guy in the back come up front and, you know, end up being a kick-ass closer, making 12 grand a month based from his minimum wage before. And he was a cool dude. And I just sat on the desk and trained his ass. And, like, you know, I thought, man, that's cool. Like, his wife seemed to be happier. His kids were more cheerful. And I just watched a little broke down Mexican. They were Mexican family, but they were literally always sulking and, you know, not sulking, but just not proud. Okay. And they had no real pride. Like, the kids came in with their heads down and they weren't having fun. And I'm like, why aren't their kids having fun? And they were very respectful and timid and shy. And the wife was always looking down and timid and shy. And he was always the hardest working individual in the whole company. Like, dude, this dude would do anything for you. Nicest guy, ethics, integrity, do the right thing. All the crap you hear, right? Hard work. And he wasn't getting anywhere. Okay. He worked there several years, dude. He got nowhere with hard work and doing the right thing and ethics and integrity and, you know, put your family first and put God first. He put God first, family first, came in, busted his ass for the organization. He was doing everything we're taught. Okay. And guess what? He was making minimum wage, zero, basically nothing. And I got to talking to him and noticed these things. And I'm like, man, let me show you how to sell cars, brother. Let me show you how to close deals. And I'll teach you how to do it, because I was able to grab people from Burger King and teach them how to sell. It was cars. It was art. I mean, I did RVs. You know, I sold a lot of things over the years. But my point is I was really good at teaching people how to actually become an effective closer, a salesperson. And that's a different two things. A salesperson is not a closer. But ask me about that later if you want to know the difference. But ultimately, I changed his life, and it became so freaking good. It felt so good that I said, man, I want to start a training company and do this for more people. So I literally quit my job. I was probably doing $500,000, maybe $300,000-$400,000. I don't remember. It was up and down. But I was making good money. But I was spending my money, right? I didn't invest in shit, you know. I made 300 grand, spent 300 grand. I made 500 grand, spent 500 grand. You know, I lived. But looking back, I was foolish. But when I quit, I didn't have any money. I paid my bills up, and I had about $35 and a half tank of gas. And I knew that $35 is going to fill up my tank, and I'm going to go out and knock on doors. And anytime I sold something, I'd live on that. And I just assumed that, like, if I can't get anybody to hire me to train their team, well, then I'm not very good, am I?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so I wasn't worried about closing a dealer to let me train their team, because, dude, I'll take over their whole dealership and freaking double it if I wanted to. So at the end of the day, it's like, hey, let me train your people. So people started allowing me to train their people. They were paying me $10,000 to show up. So I was like a Grant Cardone or Joe Verde competitor originally. I was competing to train their business.
Right.
And so when they paid me $10,000, I'd show up. Sometimes they'd grind me to $5,000, but ultimately I would show up, which means I'm now in a hotel, I'm on the road, and I'm starting to train people. And I started with all this enthusiasm and excitement because, man, I really wanted to help people. That was going to be fun. So when I went out there and I realized, you know, this isn't working, it didn't work the same, and I couldn't figure out why. And then I investigated it and came up with a revelation. To train somebody properly, you need four key ingredients: good content, repetition, practice, and accountability. I was delivering the good content, but I left. I didn't work there, so I had no ability to deliver repetition.
No repetition.
I had no ability to hold them accountable, and I wasn't there long enough to practice as often as was necessary to learn. So once I realized, man, I'm only delivering good content, that's the difference. See, when I worked at the company and I was producing these top people, I was there every day working 80 hours a day. I was doing the repetition manually. I was doing the accountability manually. 80 hours a week I was working, bro.
But did you know at that time that you were doing those
things? No, I didn't know. I didn't know why I could train people, and I didn't really break it down. I didn't realize that was the formula. I knew I could do it, but I didn't realize, oh, it's because I'm holding them accountable, and it's because I'm doing it with repetition. Oh, it's, you know, I didn't realize that. But when I went out on the road, I got good money for 3, 4, 5 months, and I was making a great, you know, impact, but people weren't changing. Like when I left and I checked, hey, how's the store doing? Oh man, they're selling way more for about a week.
And then it
went right back down. Why? Because there was turnover and management wasn't even in the room, so they didn't know what I taught and they couldn't keep teaching. You know, they couldn't hold people accountable because they didn't know what they were supposed to be doing. Everyone had their own opinion. There was no consistency. So this manager thought you should do it this way. This manager thought you should do it this way. They're both equal. The politics were ridiculous. So now guess what? His team did it this way. This team did it this way. Nobody had consistency. You know, it was just stupid. So ultimately, once I realized I'm not helping these people, I didn't want to take their money. You know, I'm not going to charge you 10 grand to train your team knowing full well, bro, I'm not going to train your team. Like, you think I'm going to train your team. You're paying me to train your team, and they still do this. Mm-hmm. But the person training, if they're not aware that you are not training your people by showing up for a day, okay, you don't train for a day, dude. Listen, training is something you do, not something you did. Right. If you ever hear that, that's from me. I originated that like 20 years ago because I told a dealer, they said, yeah, we trained already. And I'm like, dude, training isn't something you did. It's something you do. You know, I have a training system, a training technology. See, the key word is system. Most dealerships, they have training, but they don't have a training system.
Right.
And systems make the difference between effective and ineffective. So, and, you know, dealers will pay $50,000 to put, you know, people on the lot and nothing to train and prepare their team to handle those people.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
Exactly. So you said something, man, that I just want to make sure I pick your brain on this, because it's something that I see all the time and it just doesn't make sense to me. And that goes to role playing, right? Like, we don't practice enough within the dealership. Like, you wouldn't expect a professional team, a sports team, to go play without having practiced and drilled and rehearsed. And I don't see that in the car business. Like, we don't role play. We train on, or we teach theories like word tracks and things of that nature, but there's no repetition of the, let's practice this deal. Let's like kind of make cement those techniques. Let's role play this out so that when we are in front of that customer, we can just, you know, it just flows. You know, it's like waking up and brushing your teeth. Like, it becomes part of your subconscious almost. I mean, do you mean
you get good?
You get good, right? Yeah. I mean, why do you think that is, man? Is it just because we don't see the impact in it? Is it just because, like you said earlier, we're just doing what we've done in the past?
Dude, they don't know or they don't care. One of the two. They don't know or they don't care. Like, some people, they don't realize that training takes four things. If you're not doing those four things, you're not training, you're exposing.
Right.
And so if I'm exposing my salespeople to good information, that's not training my salespeople. Okay. For $200, a dealership can get a Lightspeed program to completely train every salesperson, every sales manager, every title clerk, every body shop personnel, every service advisor for less than $200. To not have a training system in today's day and age is because you don't know or you don't care. And if you don't care, it's a management problem. It's not a training problem. You have to have people that care. The owner has to care enough to get rid of a manager that doesn't. And the manager has to care enough to get rid of a salesperson that doesn't. Because again, you can't change people. If you want to be successful, I can help you do it. If you want to fix your dealership's training program, I can help you do it easily and inexpensively. But if you don't care, bro, then I can't do anything. Right. Like, I bought a treadmill once. Nobody came to my house to see if I was riding it. And guess what? For years, that thing didn't do a damn thing except hold my coat. So at the end of the day, I bought a treadmill and I didn't use it. Well, nothing happened. Okay, well, if you have training that's not working, it's ineffective. So, like, what if you went to a gas station? It was $10 a gallon, and every time you went there, you got a tenth of a gallon. Like, why would you continue to go to that gas station? Because you don't know, or you don't care, man. You don't care, dude.
Yeah.
Well, I can help people that don't know, but I can't help people that don't care.
Can we put that information in the show notes, Brad, so customers, you know, the listeners can reach out and, you know, learn?
Sure.
More? Okay, cool.
Dude, they probably already Googled me.
No, yeah.
They're listening. If they're listening, bro, they already found me.
Yeah.
They're not waiting for your show notes. Holy smokes. They're like, dude, this dude knows what he's talking about. Yeah, right. Especially in the car business, because I have training created for the car business. Grant Cardone has training. Right. Joe Verde has training. But more importantly, like, we've got Penske Automotive and all these big chains on it. Mm-hmm. You've got the training. There's people in your organization that have the good content. You don't need Brad Lee's content in some cases. Some cases you do. Well, dude, not only do we have the technology to deliver, track, and measure it and make it very easy for everybody to deliver repetition and pro role play and all that, but we've also got the content. So there's zero excuse. If you have the content, we show you how to virtualize it, put it in the system, and deliver, track, and measure it, you know, with consistency and repetition. And then, boom, your productivity skyrockets. It's also a communication tool. So there is zero reason why anyone listening to this doesn't do it, unless – they don't care. Why? Because now they know. Now you know, dog.
So let's talk about the accountability part really quick, right? Because that has become a big thing within the automotive industry. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
From marketing, from how you buy and trade for vehicles, and all those things. When it comes to training, what are some of the metrics that we should pay attention to as decision makers within the dealership? I mean, obviously logging in and are they doing the program, but
no, you're looking at the wrong metrics. Who cares if they logged in?
Right, exactly. So what is the stuff that we need to pay attention to? That's
their results, bro.
Okay.
Their productivity. I mean, what are you trying to measure? Hey, I'm training them so they'll sell more cars. Okay, well, that's what you should pay attention to. Are they selling more cars? If the answer is no, well, then train them some more. Well, what if they get pissed? Who cares? Like, who cares, dude? Listen, my kids didn't want to take their vitamins and make their bed. Okay, at the end of the day, who owns the dealership? Who runs who? Right. Like, look, are you going to let the salesman run this asylum, or are you going to take control? You're a manager. The owner trusts you, okay, to manage, okay? And manage sometimes is accountability. You know, I always like to say, look, if you don't want to make the decision, then get out of the chair, bro.
Right.
Like, if I appoint you my general manager – and I'm the owner, and you're not holding people accountable, you're screwing me. See, most people, they don't want to look in the mirror and hold people accountable because it's uncomfortable, bro. But the cool part about having a training system is, dude, you can press a button and see who's telling you to pound sand. You don't have to have confrontation. You don't have to scream. You don't have to guess. You press a button, dude, and I'll know who in the dealership is marginal. Who in the dealership needs more training, needs more assistance. Why? Because I'm tracking their productivity. I'm tracking what I want to impact. So like you say, what metrics? Logging in? I don't care if you logged in. Did you train? I don't care if you trained. You know, well, how would you know to train them then? What? Well, are they selling as many cars as I want? And if the answer is no, train them. Why? They don't know or they don't care. And I'm going to find out either way. Because if I tell you here's the training to get you better and you don't take it, what's it telling you?
They don't care.
Right. And if they don't care, that's a management problem, brother. That means do something about it. They don't care. Good. Motivate them, fire them up, or get rid of them. But nobody wants to get rid of them because they're hard to come by. No, they're not. Not when you have a training system. Shit. I can get a row of 18-year-old kids better than the current salesman you have there if nobody's managing them or leading them correctly. Why? Well, because, dude, your management's the problem. And if managers are listening to this, they're like, oh, I don't want my dealer listening to this. Well, then, dude, you're fraudulent. Or, you know, it's only a matter of time before somebody figures it out. Or you're going to be working at another dealership anyway. Why? Because if you don't do it right and you don't make money, guess what? Your dealer ain't going to be around very long anyway.
Right.
So you, what most people's, you know, handicap is, though, is they're doing well. And so now they don't think they need to train. Like, dude, we're already the number one Toyota store in our region. So what, dude? Oh, we're already doing 400 cars a month. So what? You could be doing 800 cars a month. Who cares that you're kicking everyone's ass? Are you kicking your own ass? Are you able to excel and exceed projections. And because if you're not, it's all of your salespeople making good money, or just the top 20% making good money. I had a client one time on my training program. He called and said he was going to cancel. And I said, what are you canceling for? And he said, I can't get people to use it. And I said, well, let me talk to the manager. And he said, well, I am the manager. And I said, what do you mean you can't get them to use it? And he said, dude, I've asked them, I've begged them, they just don't want to do it. So I'm going to cancel. And I said, dude, you should be canceled.
Right.
Like you should be fired. You jack off. Like, dude, you can't get someone to do what you want them to do. I say, how do you get them to show up in the morning? He says, well, if they don't show up, they'd be fired. Try that.
Yeah.
Try that. And guess what? 100% everybody was using it. And guess what happened? All their sales went up. All their liability decreased. Their turnover slowed down. Come on, man. It's not rocket science, dude. Run 5 miles a day and you probably won't be fat. Okay, if you're fat, run some freaking miles, bro. And if you don't want to, it's because you don't know or you don't care. And now you know. So if you guys are looking for me, if this has excited you, your managers, you want to train your team correctly, reach out, dude, for under a couple $100. I'm telling you, you have a system that allows you to deliver, track, and measure content. I can show you how to make your own content with a damn iPhone and an expert, meaning you got a sales manager that's so kick-ass, he desks deals like nobody's business. You got this girl in finance that writes more contracts than any other producer you got. Dude, I can virtualize those people and store that knowledge for future employees and future people, even if those people leave your company. So how do you deliver, track, and measure information consistently with repetitions? The question. And if you say you're doing it manually, well, then that's not too bright either, because you can't be consistent. I did it manually. So there's companies out there, there's dealerships out there that are saying, I do it successfully. And yes, you may do it without a training system, or I'm sorry, a technology, but you do have a training system, which means there is accountability, there is repetition. And I'm promising you, you're just taking a lot of time and money to do it. If you stick it in technology, dude, you make it real easy for the person that's doing a good job now. So if you're listening to this and you think, oh my God, this would replace me. No, it wouldn't. It would empower you. Okay. The only time it's going to get anyone in trouble is if those people are trying to fly under the radar as money taking, clock watching jackoffs. Okay. That's who it flushes out. So if you get somebody that's afraid of this system, start looking at them with a raised eyebrow, because what are you so afraid of? Being exposed, you prick. Get out of here.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. All right.
That's why I said, dude, dealers are going to love me or hate me. And let me tell you something. I'll throw out a challenge. I'll take over any dealership for 30 days, or I'll make it easier for people. It's going to cost you too, but I'll show up on a Saturday. All I want to do is talk to the people that are leaving. In other words, you decide who gets to leave. The whole company can be involved. Like, have a damn committee that says, all right, this ain't a deal. Make every person that is leaving the dealership authorized to leave by you guys. Let me talk to them before they leave. And I'll make you money that was leaving your store. Why? Because I'll close half of them.
Right on.
Maybe not half of them, but I will close a percentage of them. And why can I do it, but your team can't? Well, because they have limiting belief. They don't know how to close. They don't know the steps. They aren't prepared. Like, let me ask you a question. What do you think the first step in a sales process is?
Building that rapport.
Okay, meet and greet, build the rapport, introductions. Everybody says that. All y'all say that.
Oh, man.
No, dude. It's not true. Okay, the first step is preparation, brother. The first step is your mindset. You want to go make relationships? Fix the one you have with yourself. Get prepared. Know your product. Know your industry. Know your programs. If you're a salesperson, you should know as much as the finance producers. You should know as much as the service writers. You should know everything you need to know. Now, if you don't, it's because you don't know or you don't care. Well, if you don't know, we can help you with that.
Right.
If you don't care, we can help you with that too.
Right on, man. So we're getting close to that time, man. There is one question that I wanted to cover with you, just because of, you know, your social media presence. And like you said earlier, like, I can only imagine, you know, how much more deadly you would be selling cars in the environment today with social media and all those things, like you said, creating your own personal brand and things of that nature. How important is content in 2020? Do you think that we should be content creators in sales or in any industry? And if so, how do we, you know, what's the value of quality of content? And let me just share a quick anecdote with you. So I've been doing this podcast for about 1.5 years. And every single season we grow, we pick up more and more of an audience. But it didn't start great. You know what I mean? Like now we're doing videos. This is our first session where everything's videoed. But it was a process, right? It was terrible and it's gotten better and better. But I recently talked to somebody that I really admire in the car business and they were like, oh, well, you know, the optics of your podcast are not really for us, or basically saying that it was not a good fit or whatever, which is fine. I mean, I get it. It's not for everybody. But you got to start somewhere, right? And I'm a believer, I'm a fan of Zig Ziglar. And one of the things that he says is that anything worth doing is worth doing poorly until you can do it well. So there has to be a starting point. And I know when it comes to building content, a lot of people are waiting for things to be perfect. But in your opinion, for somebody that's starting out, how important is it? Is it more important to just start and do, or is it wait until it's like perfect before you put it out there? Because digitally, when it's out there for good, right? So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, I mean, obviously there's situations and exceptions to everything. However, I think the how is less important than the do, meaning just do and you'll figure out how. Okay. So, most people, they'll wait for the how to do and then they're screwed. So I'd say the how is not as important as the do. So I would just get on it. You'll figure it out, but seek information, right? You know, seek to improve. You know, outdo yesterday. There's, I do the five factors. You know, I talk about how to become unstoppable, you know, mindset, health, money, you know, investments, relationships, all that. But in this particular case, you know, I would say the action is more important than the how. But you ask like 100 questions. That's why when people interview me and they ask a question, I interrupt a lot, because if I don't, shit, I'll never give you the answer I was about to give you. So now you ask me something else. But earlier you said, should they create content? Well, see, dude, you're already creating content. If you're online and you make posts, you have content. Right. The question is it good or is it bad? The question is it relevant or is it irrelevant? And a lot of people, they're posting shit that they shouldn't be posting. And they're posting stuff that they think is good, but not necessarily to get a reaction or to get engagement or, you know, to make a sale or to lead to anything. They don't know how to follow up. They don't know how to build a brand. They don't know how to leverage their reach, leverage the digital media. But the internet is massive, bro. There's a dealership in the small town outperforming dealerships in big towns, yeah, thanks to the internet. But guess what? That's the connection, man. Whoever's working that phone, getting them to drive way out there. Whoever's, you know, saying, hey, I'll deliver that to you. Don't worry about it. The customer service, all of it comes into play. Do your people know how to take care of customers? Do your people know how to properly ask for referrals? Do your people know how to take care of things? Let me ask you a question. If I always used to do this to a dealer. Listen, if you sent your mom down to your dealership, who would you want them to talk to? And they always have somebody. They always name somebody.
Right.
And I'd say, wouldn't it be great if the answer was it doesn't matter?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great as if it doesn't matter who they talk to? Anybody down there is going to take the best care of you. Okay, well, they don't have that confidence because it's difficult to get that kind of result until now. You can leverage technology. I have a saying. It's at the bottom of my company emails or my email account. It says there's going to be two kinds of companies in the future, those who make technology and those who use it. So are you making it? And if the answer is no, well, then you better be using it, because you will not be around unless you make it or you use it. Say, leverage technology. You don't have to train manually. You don't have to market manually. You don't have to advertise manually. I mean, imagine the newspaper. There's dealers still advertising in the newspaper. You know why? Because there's still people coming in from the newspaper. And what's up? Well, do you think newspaper's dumb? I don't think anything's dumb if it's working.
Right.
You know, direct mail works. You know, those stupid 911 sales and lost keys and come get your football and, you know, all these promotions these ad agencies do. Dude, they've been doing them for 50 years. There's nothing new. They're called promotions. They're called events. They're called special gimmicks to get people into the dealership. And I know some good ones. I know some event companies that literally will drive more traffic into your store than you can handle. And then they'll send in their mercenary closers to handle the traffic. And they'll make you more than you've ever made in an entire weekend. And again, if you're interested in that, like if someone's hearing this and they're like, dude, I like that. Well, then dude, just reach out to me. I'll introduce you to them personally because they do it for companies all day long. Furniture stores, jewelry stores, dealerships. They're driving traffic to your store. Why? Because they know how to leverage Facebook and digital media to geo-target and literally entice people to come into your organization. They can up your traffic by 300% any weekend you choose. How do they do that? Oh, dude, that's what I'm talking about. Now, see, why aren't they training our team to do it for us? I don't want to train your salesman how to sell anymore. I want to train your salesman how to hunt.
Right on. There it is. Dude, thank you so much, man, for coming on. I really appreciate it. I wanted to give you a moment to talk about, Lightspeed BT, man. How can dealers leverage it? It's such a, to me, it's such a no brainer, man. Like you talk
about turnover. Yeah, but I appreciate the opportunity, but I don't need to talk about it, brother. Cause if you hit replay, I talked about it the whole time.
Right on.
All you got to do is hear this podcast again or share it for someone that needs to hear it. Hey, quit pencil whipping your employees, folks. That's another thing, dude. A lot of these car dealerships I'm listening about because their salesmen are talking to me. They're in my closer school. I got closer school and closer school live. I got a lot of car salesmen in there, and I'm just – it's fun. But anyway, I listen to the same old stories. Again, a lot of stuff has changed, but a lot of stuff's the same. And what dealers don't understand is, man, we can't keep good employees. Well, that's because you're pencil whipping them, man. Like, find some partners that want to operate – your dealership and steer you to growth and reward them. Okay. Allow them to make some money, dude. They'll make you get a bunch of high paid kick ass people. You're going to have less headaches and more profit long term than keep pencil whipping all these people to where eventually all you have is the bottom of the barrel, you know, ruffians running your dealership and ruining your brand and ruining your name and causing you to be liable. And by the way, if you guys are thinking, oh, he thinks he's so angelic, dude, listen, I was the ruffian running your dealership. Like, dude, I was shooting people in the wiener with a pellet gun as they walked up on the sales tower. Like, dude, we were putting signs on people's back that said, I have a crooked boner, and sending them out into the customer traffic. We were telling dirty jokes out on the point in front of everybody, you know, and we had female salespeople. Well, guess what, dude? You tell the wrong joke in front of the wrong salesperson, especially when they're female or they're gay or they have a different background, race, religion. Dude, there's so many rules. You better just keep your damn pie hole shut or train everybody to respect, right? So again, develop your people, man, and pay them well would be my tip for owners and dealers. Now, again, they're not going to like that, but believe it or not, I promise you, you'll make more than you're making now. The management team, I would say the management that's listening to this is you can easily track and measure and hold people accountable if you leverage technology, and you should, because you're being trusted to manage and grow and duplicate and nourish those people that are coming in the door. Learn how to recruit and onboard people correctly and quickly and effectively. And then for the salespeople coming in or the front line, because again, service advisors are salespeople.
Right.
You know, the service directors like the GSM, you know, the GM, you know, I don't know, everybody here listening knows how a dealership runs, but at the end of the day, the front line, the service providers, the finance writers, and the salespeople. I don't know if you're line or closer, but you know, those people. I would say, listen, the more hands you shake, the more money you make. Don't rely on the dealer to survive or thrive. Like the advertisement that they got coming in and pushing traffic into your store, be grateful, be aware. But man, you're not going to survive on that, kids. Understand that you have to shake more hands to make more money. You have to go out and hunt. You have to learn and execute on unbelievable ways to get your name in the marketplace. And when you do, okay, the dealer becomes irrelevant, meaning I know people right now that any dealership in the country would hire and bend over backwards and give them special days off. Why? Because they can sell 300 cars by themselves. They come in there with two or three assistants. They're business people that will operate in your dealership. And dude, how would you like to do that? How would you like to evolve there? Because again, the sales person's reputation is only bad if you believe it's bad. I do not. Like when my daughters grow up, I want them to marry salespeople. Why? So I know that they're going to be all right.
Right on.
Like doctors, dude. Doctors use, like, everybody wants their daughter and their kids to grow up and marry a doctor and become doctors and become lawyers. I want my daughter to become a doctor and a lawyer. Why do we want that? Because we think that's what people respect. That's what's prestigious. That's what we're supposed to do. But would you want your kid to grow up to be a doctor if doctors were, like, frowned upon? What if you went to a doctor and all they ever did was tried to touch you in your potty spot? Well, then nobody would say doctors, right? We respect doctors. So how come nobody says salespeople? Because we don't respect salespeople. Why? Why does society look down upon sales? It's the highest paid profession in the world. You don't have to be unethical. You have to be good. You have to be skilled. You have to be freaking omnipresent. And with the internet, brother, we're connected to the whole world. Totally. You're not making enough money? It's your fault. Go look in the mirror. That's who's responsible. Come on, man. That's the best I got for you right now.
There it is. Great way to end things, man. Dude, thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. It's a really, really good session. Lots of insights. You know, what can I say, man? Thank you. The Real Brad Lee, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. If you haven't done so, please, please make sure to share this podcast, share this episode with anybody that can benefit from this information so that they can take it back to the dealership and implement in their day-to-day.
It's okay. Tag your bosses.
There you go. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. And as usual, we'll talk later.